We are in the Gospel of John this morning, and we are studying the trial of Jesus, if you would call it a trial. It's really not a trial at all. It's the Jews ramrodding this thing through. It's an evil plot that had been going on for many years. It's really not much of a trial at all. But we have seen that when they took Jesus out of the Garden of Gethsemane and they led him away bound, they took him first of all to the Jewish courtroom, and they took him first to Annas. Now, at this time, there were actually two men that were sort of held out to be high priests, although God had ordered that there would be only one high priest at a time. There were two that were recognized here as being high priests. One was Annas. Annas had formerly been deposed as high priest, but the Jews still recognized him, and he had a good bit of authority among the people. And so they took Jesus first to Annas, and Annas questioned Jesus up through the night. Then Jesus was taken to Caiaphas, who was Annas's son-in-law, and who was formerly recognized by the Romans anyway as being the high priest over Israel at this time. And Caiaphas then questioned Christ. Well, now we're going to see that Jesus is taken to the Roman authorities. And, of course, the first or the man that he's taken to there, we all know as Pontius Pilate. Pilate was the governor over this Roman province called Israel. See, Israel was part of the Roman Empire at this time. They had conquered them, and it was just a little province within the Roman Empire. And so Pilate was the governor that Rome sent to rule over any issues that they would have in this Jewish province. Now, of course, this business of Jesus going before Pilate is found in all four Gospels. So I want to take a few minutes this morning and let's read the accounts of this business before Pilate. So Matthew, let's start in Matthew. Matthew chapter 27, starting in verse 11. So Matthew 27, 11, and it says, "And Jesus stood before the governor," of course that's Pilate, "and the governor asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, Thou sayest." Now, when they said, "Thou sayest" back then, that was their way of saying, yes, you said it and it's true. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then said Pilate unto him, "Hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee?" And he answered him never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now at that feast, the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, "Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ?" For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, "Have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, "Whether of the two will ye that I release unto you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate saith unto them, "What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ?" They all say unto him, "Let him be crucified." And the governor said, Why? What evil hath he done?" But they cried out the more, saying, "Let him be crucified." When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water, washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it." Oh, don't you wish we could just wash our hands with water and be righteous? But that's not the way it works. We must come through Christ. Then answered all the people and said, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Well, that's Matthew's account. Let's turn over to Mark. Mark chapter 15. 6 through 15. So Mark 15:6 says, "Now at that feast he released unto them one prisoner, whomsoever they desired. There was one named Barabbas, which lay bound with them that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had ever done unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, Will ye that I release unto you the King of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priests moved the people, that he should rather release Barabbas unto them. And Pilate answered and said again unto them, What will ye then that I shall do unto him whom ye call the King of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. Then Pilate said unto them, Why? What evil hath he done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, Crucify him. And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them, and delivered Jesus, when he had scourged him, to be crucified." And then let's go to Luke 23. Luke chapter 23. And it says in Luke 23, beginning in verse 1, "And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And Pilate asked him, saying, Art thou the King of the Jews? And he answered him and said, Thou sayest it. Then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man. And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught, and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. And the same day Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for before they were enmity between themselves. And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, said unto them, Ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I have examined him before you, have found no fault in this man, touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For of necessity he must release one unto them at the feast. And they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas, who for a certain sedition made in the city and for murder was cast into prison. Pilate, therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. And he said unto them the third time, Why? What evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired. But he delivered Jesus to their will." Now we come to the John account. John chapter 18 is where we are. And we find this beginning in John 18:28. It says, "Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment, and it was early. And they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out unto them and said, What accusation bring ye against this man? They answered and said unto him, If he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. Then said Pilate unto them, Take ye him and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, It is not lawful for us to put any man to death. That the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spake, signifying what death he should die. Then Peter entered into the judgment hall again, and called Jesus, and said unto him, Art thou the King of the Jews? Did I say Peter? I meant Pilate. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall, and called Jesus, and said unto him, Art thou the King of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Now Pilate saith unto him, What is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again unto the Jews, and saith unto them, I find in him no fault at all. But ye have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the King of the Jews? Then cried they all again, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. Now, what we're going to do here this morning is just tackle a few of these little issues, and we won't have time to cover all of this story about Pilate and Barabbas and all of that. However, as I said before, this was really not a trial. The Jews had determined long ago that they were going to kill Jesus. In fact, as far back as John chapter 5, you remember that when Jesus cured the lame man and caused him to walk, the man got up and walked. Unfortunately, it was on the Sabbath day. I shouldn't say that. I think Jesus healed him intentionally on the Sabbath day to stir up a controversy between him and the Jews. But the Jews, it said, from that point forward, wanted to kill Jesus because he had healed a man on the Sabbath day. So way back as far as that, John chapter 5, they were intent on killing him. We found in John chapter 11, after Jesus healed Lazarus, that the Jewish officials were highly concerned at this point, because now all the people were flocking to Jesus. His miracles were becoming more and more irrefutable. And finally, when he raised Lazarus from the dead, this was just intolerable to Caiaphas and the chief priests and the elders. And so they got together in a back room, and they met together, and they said, What will we do with this man? I mean, everybody's following after him. It won't be long before he will be recognized by everyone. And therefore, so they got together in the back room, and Caiaphas said, Look, if we let this man go on gathering people to himself, the Romans are going to come down and destroy our nation because they don't want an insurrection. And therefore, Caiaphas, unbeknownst to himself, he prophesied, and he said, It's better that one man should die for the nation than the whole nation perish. So they decided in the back room that we got to kill this man. We got to do away with him. So you can see that it's really not a trial for the purpose of determining whether Jesus is guilty of anything or not. It's a back room get together. And also in the middle of the night. It is significant, I think, that Jesus was condemned both by the Jews and by the Gentiles. Remember that Jesus came to die for the sins of the whole world. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that Jesus was going to die for every person in the world? No. It means that he was going to die for the whole world in the sense that all classes of people are included in the purpose of his death. Jesus was to die for Jews and for Gentiles. Salvation was to extend to all peoples of the world. And it's interesting here that we find that the Jews condemn Christ to death, and finally the Gentiles or the Romans also condemn him to death. And that shows that all men are sinners. And what horrendous sinners they were, really, that would condemn an innocent man, a good man, a very good man, and that they would kill him and send him to such a horrific death. So it shows the depth of depravity that human beings have fallen to because of the sin of Adam. So Jesus was taken to the Romans. Now, you might ask the question, why did the Jews take Jesus to Pilate? You might think, and you would probably be right, that they could have killed Jesus right there. After all, you remember that the mob stoned Stephen a little bit later in Acts, later in the book of Acts. And so they didn't take Stephen to the Romans. They took him down to the stoning pit and stoned him. So more than likely, the Jews could have gotten away with it. The Romans would have winked at it, more than likely. And they could have killed Jesus without taking him to Pilate. So the question would be then, why did they then take Christ to the Romans? Well, there were several reasons. The first reason would have been the reason of legality. Apparently, the Romans had a rule or a law that in the peoples that they had conquered, the issue of capital punishment would be one that Rome would determine. In other words, we're not going to give our slaves that right. Now, they can handle a lot of their own business, but when it comes to capital punishment, we're not going to extend authority to them to kill people in that way. And so it was a matter of legality to take people to the Roman courts, and this they did with Jesus. I think it was a guise of legality. These Jews weren't concerned about the law in terms of putting Jesus to death, but under the guise of legality, they took Jesus to Pilate. Secondly, they took Jesus to the Romans as a matter of safety because the people of Israel were flocking to Christ at this time. Now, you might remember that earlier in his ministry, that when he came to Jerusalem, the multitudes followed him. 5,000 men, and then women and children included, followed him up into the mountain. And you remember that Jesus fed them all on that occasion. So you had thousands of people flocking around Christ, really from the early part of his ministry to the very end. He was very, very famous. Jesus couldn't walk into the city without there being an uproar and a great flocking of people to him. And therefore, these graybeards sitting back in the back rooms, they figured, you know what, we better not take him and stone him right now. What are the people going to do when they wake up in the morning? And they might come up after us and stone us. And so for as a matter of safety, the Jews said, let's send him over to the Romans and see if the Romans will kill this man. That brings up a thought to me. Are evil men really concerned with the law at all? Not really. Evil men aren't concerned with what the law is. Now, they'll use the law to their advantage. So when it's to their advantage to use the law, oh, the law, how wonderful it is. But evil men really aren't concerned with obeying the law or following the law when it's not to their advantage. They're more concerned about their reputations, aren't they? That's what evil men are really concerned about. They're more concerned about their reputations than doing right. Now, these men were engaged in a great sin, of killing Christ, but their only concern was their reputation in the community. And so they sent Christ over to the Romans to see if they could lay the burden on the shoulders of the Romans, you see. Thirdly, they took Jesus to the Romans so that Jesus could be crucified. Now, crucifixion was the Roman form of capital punishment. It was designed to be the most horrible and horrific of deaths and the most shameful of all deaths. It was a great reproach, even in the Jewish law, to be hanged on a tree. And therefore, the Jewish authorities wanted Jesus to be crucified rather than stoned, you see. Now, they probably could have got away with stoning Jesus at this time. But if possible, they would like for Jesus to suffer the most public humiliation so as to bring the greatest shame and greatest reproach on him. They would like for the people to wake up the next morning and to walk outside the city and look up and see Jesus hanging there in shame and humiliation so that his reputation would be forever damaged. Fourthly, though, they took him to the Romans for crucifixion because it was the decree of God that Jesus should die on a cross for sinners. It was not God's decree that Jesus should be hanged or beheaded or stoned, but it was God's eternal decree that Jesus would be crucified. Now, these Jewish sinners thought that they were determining the type of death which Jesus would die, but they were merely the instruments in the hands of a sovereign God to carry out what he had previously determined to be done. Now, you might remember that Jesus himself knew that he would die by crucifixion. You remember that he had told Nicodemus in John chapter 3, the Son of Man must be what? Lifted up. He must be lifted up. And he says it again, I believe it's John chapter 12, that the Son of Man must be lifted up above the earth. So that is, the Son of Man will not be thrown down and stoned, but rather he will be lifted up on a tree. Jesus had told his disciples that the Son of Man must be delivered up to the Gentiles and scourged and killed. Furthermore, he specified that that he would be crucified. And this was a reference to the kind of death that he would suffer. And so we see that crucifixion was the kind of death that God ordained for Jesus in order for Christ to absorb our punishment in his own body on the tree. God apparently determined that it would not be right for Jesus to die an easy death, but it would be a horrible and horrific death because, after all, Jesus was bearing our sins in his body when he died. It says in Acts chapter 4, verses 27 and 28, one of my favorite passages here, to show how that God is even sovereign over the wicked hands of men. And in Acts chapter 4, verses 27 and 28, it says, "For of a truth, against thy holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together for to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done." So here you have everybody gathered together wanting to crucify Christ. The Jews, the Gentiles, Pontius Pilate, Herod, Caiaphas, all of these people, and all of the people in general crying out, "Crucify him, crucify him," and they are doing whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. And so the Jews took Jesus to the Romans by the purpose and the providence and the power of God. How great is our God who controls all things and who easily controls the wicked hands of men. Now, I want you to see a little bit about the Jews here who have taken Jesus to Pilate. You'll notice in verse 28, I call it their industry, because you'll notice in verse 28, John 18, 28, what time of day was it? It was early. It was probably shortly after dawn by the time they took Jesus to Pilate. But remember, this had been an all-night effort. Now, you would have thought that they were chasing down the most dangerous of criminals. You would have thought that they were chasing down Machine Gun Kelly here, or some serial killer. Such was their determination, and they put all of their effort and industry into taking Christ. They hired Judas. They enlisted Roman soldiers. They went out at midnight to make the arrest in the garden. They kept the courthouse open all night. Annas and Caiaphas were on call all night long. And now they bring Jesus to Pilate while it is still very early. So see how much their heart was set against God and His Christ. Wicked men are very industrious to do their wickedness, aren't they? But also notice the great hypocrisy of the Jews. Now, they have brought in an innocent man into the Roman courts to kill him. And this they have been plotting for 3 years. They conducted a sham of a trial in the middle of the night without calling any witnesses for the defense. Before he was convicted, they pummeled him and spat upon him and reviled him. And they abused their prisoner in every way. But now notice how righteous they are. It says in verse 28, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall. Why? Lest they should be defiled. I can't stand religious hypocrisy, can you? I hope you have an aversion to it like I do. But they were thought themselves to be so religious that they couldn't walk into the judgment hall of the Romans lest they be defiled. And here they are killing the most innocent of men. And so I call them stinking hypocrites. Their hearts were utterly defiled by their sin already. Their hearts were as evil as they could be, with no compassion for a human being at all, much less for a righteous human being. And yet they were concerned that they might be ceremonially defiled by a violation of their superstitions. So listen to what Jesus said about these Pharisees earlier. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. And so you see the religious hypocrisy of these Jews as they commit the greatest sin of all time and at the same time pretend to worry about ceremonial defilement. Nothing is worse than a sinner, except a sinner dressed up in religious clothing. Now, the first thing that we see here is, with regard to Pilate, is Pilate's initial conference with the Jews. Now, what I want you to know here is that you've seen that the Jews won't go in to the Roman courtroom, you see. The Jews are remaining outside. So what you're going to find in this whole dialogue about Pilate is Pilate is going back and forth. Pilate goes out to see the people and he asks them, what's going on? What do you want? What's the charge? What's your evidence? Then he comes back and he questions Jesus. Then he goes back to see the people and back to Christ. So you'll take note then of this movement back and forth. But this initial conference that he has in verses 29 through 32 is his conference with the Jews who are outside. You will notice that Pilate went outside to them. The Jews would not come in to his courtroom inside. So Pilate went out to the Jews. Now, so far, I think we see at least something commendable about Pilate, right? First of all, Pilate is up about his business early. He doesn't seem to be a slacker, at least on this occasion. He's up early in the morning to do business, and so should public officials be up early about the people's business. And we also see that Pilate was willing to humble himself to some extent to come out to the Jews. Pilate could have sat inside the judgment hall and said, you know what, if y'all won't come into me, then I'm not going to go out to you. But he condescended to go out, and this perhaps is to Pilate's credit. Now, you have to understand that in a criminal matter, even in our law, under our law today, there must be an indictment. Does anyone know what an indictment is? An indictment is a charge. It's not a conviction in any way, but it is a charge that says, we believe that this man has committed an offense, or at least we believe that there's probable cause to think that he did, and that a trial is warranted. That's what you have when you have grand juries. The prosecutor goes into the grand jury, who might be a group of 12 people, and these people decide whether the prosecutor has any evidence that would warrant a trial in the matter. And so this is basically what Pilate was going out to find out, was whether the Jews had any evidence whatsoever to warrant him trying this man, Jesus. So Pilate goes out and he says, what accusation bring you against this man? So you see how he's asking for an indictment. He's asking for the charge. Now, again, I don't think that we can see any sin to be drawn against Pilate as yet. He's carrying out his duty, and he is apparently going about it in a lawful way. But notice the answer of the Jews. And the Jews said, if he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. What do you think about that answer? Doesn't really give any specifics, does it? It says, look, you can trust us. Based on our fidelity, based on our trustworthiness, you just take it from us, Pilate. This man is a malefactor, and he needs to be put to death. So you can see in this answer, first of all, a certain degree of disrespect to Pilate. Pilate is going to be the judge here. Pilate comes out and says, what's the charge? What is the accusation? And these people say, oh, just take it from us. This man is a malefactor. So Pilate is asking for nothing more than what the law requires. He wants to know what the charge is. He wants to know if there is any evidence against him. And since the Jews don't have a very good charge, and since they don't have very good evidence, they resort to sort of a cavalier and disrespectful answer. Essentially, they are asking Pilate to condemn Christ on the basis of their trustworthiness rather than upon any solid evidence. And this is an affront to the office of the governor. Secondly, we see the Jews' malicious and false characterization of Jesus. You will notice that they referred to Jesus as a malefactor. That is, he's a criminal and an evil doer. Now, in almost every legitimate law, the law presumes a man innocent until proven guilty. That's certainly the case in our law. But these Jews, of course, presumed Christ guilty no matter what. Now, it's interesting that they didn't say to Pilate, he is a murderer, or he is a robber, or he is a felon of some sort, but only that he was an evil doer. Oh, that we might have more evildoers like Jesus. Jesus went about doing good every day of his life, and everything that he did was good and gracious and true and kind and thoughtful and according to the will of God. And yet the Jews asked Pilate to take their word for it. This man is an evildoer, and we would not be here if he were not a malefactor. Well, didn't even get halfway through that, and we're out of time. So I'll pick that back up on that with Pilate probably next week. So, all right, let's dismiss here in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. We thank you for this wonderful truth that you give to us. We thank you for the Scriptures that teach us these things, that give us a record of these things so that we can look into them and see how righteous Christ is and how sinful men are. Father, we pray that you bless us now as we go into our worship hour. We ask this.